Welcome to Parents Perspective. Clara could hear the blare of a car horn out front, followed quickly by the heavy clump of 16-year-old Lee's shoes on the stairs. "Bye, Mom," he called, grabbing his jacket and opening the front door. "Wait," she yelled from the kitchen. "Where are you going? Whose car is that?" "Oh," he countered nonchalantly, "that's just Dave, Ben, and Henry. Dave got his wheels and we're going to drive around for a while." "Dave just got his license, and you, Ben, and Henry are all driving around with him at the wheel?" Clara could hardly contain herself. "How responsible is that?" "Aw, Mom," he bent down to kiss her on the cheek. "We're not doing much. We'll be fine. See you later." From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teenage driving? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert with insights that will call all parents to action on this issue. Chief Officer Robert Shepard is fire chief of the Early Heights Volunteer Fire Company in Severna Park, Maryland, and an instructional designer with the Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute of the University of Maryland at College Park. A certified driving instructor with the Motor Vehicle Administration, he helped develop the internationally acclaimed Prom Promise Anti-Drunk Driving Initiative. Chief Officer Shepard has two grown daughters and a young grandson. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Chief.
Thank you, Linda. Pleased to be here.
What's the biggest issue with teenage driving today?
One of the biggest issues, I think, across the board is parents that try to put their children into cars too quickly. The maturity level of these kids coming out now, they don't look at vehicles as a danger. They look at vehicles as a convenience of getting them from point A to point B. And unfortunately, the parents try to get out from under the ball and chain with taking the kids to soccer practice and sporting events and part-time jobs and going all over the state, essentially. And they want the kids to assume a major role in this transportation. And they're placing these kids into high-risk, low-frequency events that are causing fatalities because these kids are not able, coming out of the driver schools, out of the driver education curriculums, they just don't know every situation, and they're learning essentially by the school of hard knocks. And I think the biggest issue that we're faced with is, you know, parents making that determination that they're ready to drive when in effect they need a lot of supervision, a lot of cultivating, a lot of nurturing, care and nurturing before they do that.
Is there one mistake that parents tend to uniformly make that we need to be on guard against?
Yes. The biggest mistake I think that parents make is assuming that the driving schools are going to prepare their son or daughter for the tasks of driving. I mean, we can essentially teach them psychomotor skills. We can teach them to make turns. We can teach them to navigate a car from point A to point B. But you can't teach them how to think. And you can't teach them how to react to sudden, unplanned-for events that occur unexpectedly in front of them that require some type of evasive maneuvering, for instance, which we don't teach. We teach theory, but we don't teach them in practical application because of the time constraints. So 30 hours in a classroom, which is probably a pretty fair representative sample across the country, and so many hours, anywhere from 6 to 10 hours behind the wheel with an instructor, it only catches the tip of the iceberg. It really does. I mean, they're not trained to go out there and make adult decisions under stress. These kids are not making good decisions when they're stressed out in school and home and other events that go on in their life. So when a sudden, unexpected, unplanned-for event occurs, they don't know how to react to it.
It's too scant, basically. The education they're getting to drive is not enough.
No, it isn't. It really isn't.
When your own children were ready to learn to drive, what did you most want them to know?
It's pretty tough as a parent. I'll tell you right up front. I told my daughters, I said, the road to driving starts here with me. I said, you will pass muster with me. And they went through driver education with me, which was absolutely the kiss of death.
It was really tough.
It was really, really uncool. And I said, Dad, don't tell anybody that we're your daughters. So I said, okay, no problem. But I told them, I said, you're going to listen to what I have to say. You're going to absorb it. You're going to practice exactly what I teach you. And when it comes to the point in time that I'm comfortable with how you're handling certain situations, then I'll release you on a limited basis. But I said, I'm not going to just give you carte blanche to go out there and drive because you've completed driver's ed.
I remember driving with each of my kids, who are now grown men, of course. And I remember how surprised I was when my middle son went out with me for the first time, and I was going to let him drive out of our neighborhood, which is a little closed cul-de-sac, to the swimming pool parking lot, which is a half a block away. And he drove as if he were a real pro. And I thought, my God, he is really good at this. And he, of course, is the youngest among his entire group of friends. He was in his 20s when I learned that one of his friends had been letting him drive around. Soon as the friend got the license, he let him drive all over his neighborhood. The parents weren't home. The kid had his own access to a car, a family car. I was really shocked.
What parents don't realize is when kids stop being afraid, they need to start worrying and when they're driving a car. And it was an excellent observation. These kids are out there driving their friends' cars on learner's permits all over the country. They're driving. Some of them don't even have driver's licenses. But, you know, they get out there, they're friends with people, and they say, come on, let me just drive it around the block. And they drive it. And they drive the car, and they do get this experience like that. But what the parents need to understand is when someone else drives a car registered to them, or someone in their family drives a car registered to somebody else, and they have a crash, those parents are responsible up until their 18th birthday. So if they go out there and injure a carload of young adults, or, you know, take somebody that's looking for a Division 1A scholarship in soccer or football, and they end up paralyzing them, they're not going to be their friends any longer. When the attorneys get involved and the civil actions start, there's going to be situations like that the parents, I mean, they think, turn them loose in a car. But the reality of it is they are responsible for what goes on, and the parents are going to take the hit financially, and everything that they've ever had in their life is on the auction block when that happens.
One of the things you said earlier about the kids learning to be aware of what might suddenly happen in front of them jogged in my mind a memory I had where somebody came from behind. My son had to be aware of what was going on in all the mirrors because a car came from behind and passed him on the right where there was no lane. And my son was giving a right turn signal, and the guy hit him. And it was, of course, the other guy's fault. I was in the passenger seat. We were going very slowly. My son had a learner's permit, and we were driving in the neighborhood. But I thought, you know what? This is an inexperienced driver. He didn't see this guy coming. I saw him, but I couldn't stop, you know, what we were doing. And I thought, boy, how do we teach them to be aware of what's all around them and not just straight ahead? We say, watch the road. You know, but you got to watch everywhere.
I have a story I'll tell you about that in a second, a very tragic one, about a member of our Prom Promise team, a mother and father, who lost a daughter. But in the meantime, we teach them that when they are stopped at intersections and are stopped in traffic, to always be scanning those mirrors, the left one, the middle one, the right one, every 5 seconds. Because if they look in those mirrors and they see traffic bearing down on them, and that little voice says, hey, they're not going to stop. Well, they're in a slow lane, hopefully, and on the right side of that slow lane, they have an emergency escape path. So if they maintain at least 2 car lengths of space between the vehicle in front of them, and they see this car coming, and they say, I don't think it's going to stop, they have that last clear chance of avoidance by pulling off into this emergency escape path and allowing that vehicle to come through and hit whoever else it's going to run into. Because the danger of this is, when you're hit from behind, it's like a croquet ball. It catapults you through that intersection anywhere from 75 to 150 feet. And as they're traveling through that intersection, they have no control of the car, and the cars coming in opposite directions are going to broadside them. So they're going to get the double whammy. Not to mention the fact that a very dangerous part of this whole thing is when they are hit from behind and they are thrust into the vehicle in front of them because they are positioned too close to the car in front, those airbags are going to deploy. And I can tell you, that when these airbags deploy, it's like a cannon going off. I mean, these things deploy with ferocity like you would not believe. They come out at about 1/30th of a second on this deployment at about 200 miles per hour, depending upon the make and model of the car that you're in. And for someone that's sitting closer than 10 to 12 inches to that steering column, you ask the traumatologists, the chest surgeons that work on these people in the trauma centers, that it can rupture your aorta, it can rupture the lungs, it can cause extensive internal damage. That's why you don't want anybody under the age of 14 sitting up front with a passenger side airbag.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teen driving.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Chief Officer Robert Schappert about teenage driving.
Chief, you mentioned a story you wanted us to hear.
Yes. It's a very tragic story. It happened in Severna Park. My organization actually responded to this crash. It involved a young freshman in a Severna Park high school. And it's so tragic to talk about this. It was her first date. It was her father's birthday. It was Good Friday, and she was killed a half hour after she left the house.
Oh, my gosh.
The boys she was with, they came up to an intersection. They were coming south. She was in a car, did not have a seatbelt on, and she had to be home by 11. So in order to make it, he drove down the side of the road, the shoulder of the road, at the exact moment, hopefully, that the light was going to change. But he ended up running the red light. At the same time, a car was making a left turn, being chased by police officers because they had just made a drug deal down the street. The truck that they were riding in was broadsided. It flipped 2.5 times. It ejected her partially out of the car. She was pinned, embedded in the roof of the car.
Oh, my gosh.
And she died in the arms of a police officer. And the parents are part of my Prom Promise team. Mm-hmm. And they come in there and talk about decisions and consequences. And it's an absolute tearjerker. But these are the things that happen. These are what kids are doing out there.
I guess the hard thing for parents is we can't quite believe that this could happen to our kids.
It does, and it will, and I'll tell you one more quick one. Another mother that's part of my Prom team lost her daughter. This is why I tell parents, please screen who your kids are riding with, for God's sake. If you don't do anything else in this world, please go to the Motor Vehicle Administration, get a copy of their driving records. You probably can do that in just about every state. Find out, this kid that took this mother's child and several other girls for a ride of death, as I call it, down one of the local streets, lost control of the car. He was 17 years old. He had a driving record of about 3 pages. Oh, yeah.
And
Yeah, 17. He was under the influence of alcohol, and he lost control, wrapped it around a tree in a neighbor's front yard. She wasn't wearing a seatbelt in the back. She always wore a seatbelt. She was thrown into the windshield right between the seats, killed outright. And the mother said, I wish I had been more proactive in looking at the people my kids are riding with. Mm-hmm. And parents, you've got to do that.
When you teach teens to drive, what do you emphasize?
I emphasize that they are not 10 feet tall and bulletproof.
Oh, boy.
That their bones are going to break, their bodies are going to bleed, and they're going to suffer tragic consequences of poor decision making. And I know that's not what they want to hear, but the reality of it is, we don't teach defensive driving anymore. I mean, that's kind of a term of the past. They learn defensive driving through the school of hard knocks. When an event occurs that places them in a very uncomfortable situation, that's imprinted in the memory chips, and they have a tendency to stay away from situations that would lead to that in the future, hopefully, learning by experience. What we teach them is to manage acceptable levels of risk. Risk is always present, but risk is shared. Risk can be altered. Risk can be changed. And it's all in the mindset of the people that are in the car. And the last place, and listening to your opening story, the last place a parent wants their child is sitting in the back seat of a car with a 16-year-old that just got their driver's license. For every child, and this is a parent's worst nightmare, and the kids don't want to hear this, but the parents, they'll probably sing the praises after this one. For every child that's in the car, that increases the probability of a significant emotional event by 10%. So if you have six children or six kids in a car with your inexperienced driver, you've got a 60% probability that something's going to happen, whatever that means, because of the inexperience, the distraction, the sonic blasters, as I refer to them, cranked up. There's a lot of inattention inside the driving environment. So little attention is being paid to the external environment of the car. And that's when these sudden, unexpected, unplanned for events occur, that the only thing these inexperienced drivers are able to do are two things: hit the brakes and jerk the steering wheel, which in many cases are the absolute worst things you can do. But that's all they're trained to do. And that's all they rely on because of the inattention. They're not scanning. They're not practicing the SIPDE of basic driving: scanning, identifying, predicting the actions of drivers, making decisions out there, and then executing game plans where are preventative strategies on how to actually survive. I mean, that's what driver education is all about in this country. It's teaching survival skills. It's not teaching them right turn, left turn, parallel parking. It's teaching them how to survive in a very dangerous environment. Taking a 3,500-pound loaded weapon and aiming it down one of the most dangerous places in the United States, that is a public highway.
Now, if you were trying to choose a driving school as a parent, what would you look for then?
Ask the driving school that you are going to select. Do you teach nighttime driving? What are the qualifications of your drivers? Mm-hmm. What do you require your instructors to have? Are you teaching a standardized curriculum? Or do you have your own curriculum? If they say their own, I'd be very suspect about that, because some of these standardized curriculums are very good. And I can speak to Maryland's and California's and Pennsylvania's, because they have excellent driving curriculums and graduated licensing programs there. But some of these schools, I have to report to you, are fly by night.
Now, what about the time spent in the classroom? Is that worthwhile at all?
It all depends on the instructor. It can be the most worthwhile experience that a child has had. But the instructor will make or break that learning process right there. Now, does the instructor adhere to discovery learning, where the children go out and they have to research various things? They have to read the book. They have to come in and make presentations. Does the instructor encourage intergroup activities in a classroom? Or is it all just straight showing slides or showing overhead transparencies? I would select a school where they hire retired public safety people that can bring in fire service background. It can bring in law enforcement background. It can bring in transportation issues. Anybody can go into a classroom, pick up a curriculum, and start reading from it.
Chief, what are some of the rules you would suggest for teenage drivers? I guess rules for parents to make for their sons and daughters.
Rule number one, screen who they allow in the car. For the first 6 months to a year, nobody but family. They'll thank you for this someday. If they come in there and they hammer away at you, come on, let me take my friend, let me go here, let me go there, you're setting yourself up. Keep the distractions out of the car until they get some driving experience. Rule number two, have them, force them, make them wear occupant restraints. When they have horrific car crashes, these kids are ejected out of their cars, they're tossed around inside these vehicles, they incur spinal cord injuries, and it's all preventable. And I think rule number three, teach them the responsibility for their actions. Hold them accountable and tell them, when you go out here and you hurt somebody, you're going to end up paying a very steep price for it. And I think those are the top three that I would really encourage parents to do.
We had a rule about listening to the radio when there were other people in the car.
Absolutely.
Of course, we weren't there to see that they didn't do it,
yep.
But we tried.
Keep the radio turned down, honestly. Yeah. Turn those sonic blasters down, because they can't concentrate on the music and what's going on 20 to 30 seconds ahead of them. That's the problem.
Do you think that would be a good idea for parents to spend a lot of time driving with their kids, irrespective of how much driver education they have?
Absolutely. I recommend to parents 50 hours, at least 50 hours. And parents, I will say this to you, call a truce. When you're in a car, don't yell, don't scream. It's a mobile teaching laboratory. It's supposed to be an educational experience. And you know that when you have an argument with your child at home and start yelling and screaming, they tune you right out. The communications process is gone at that point. And the last place you want to have poor communication is in the front seat of a vehicle that you're teaching them how to drive. So don't ever yell and raise your voice to them and scream at them in the car. It accomplishes nothing.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teen driving.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Chief Officer Robert Shepard about teenage driving. Would you tell us about the award-winning program we mentioned earlier, the Prom Promise Anti-Drunk Driving Initiative?
Yes. This program was one out of 70 entries for the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and it won the Fire Service Award of Excellence in 1999. And I have to credit my boss, Stephen D. Edwards, who's the director of the Maryland Fire Institute and Rescue Institute, with his vision in how can the Institute participate in community service on behalf of the University of Maryland. And I made this suggestion to him that this was a program we should develop. He gave the okay, and the rest is history. We go out, and every spring between April and May, we put on prom assemblies to area high schools. And we have a combination of an inside assembly plus an outside mock crash demonstration with helicopters and fire and rescue vehicles and everything. And it's been taken on a road. We've done this in Bethard, Colorado. And Chapel Hill, North Carolina, I think, has adopted the program. They're going to use it down there. We've done it in neighboring counties in Maryland. And it's been very successful. It's a hard-hitting, in-your-face kind of program to really reach out. And, I mean, we have coffins. We have undertakers.
So you simulate an actual crash?
Well, outside we do, yes. And the participants in this, it's pretty scary. When they're in there and hydraulic rescue tools are cutting the car apart and we're extricating them and we've got them covered. And
these are teenagers
that you... These are teenagers from the SAD groups. Yeah, from the SAD groups, the Students Against Destructive Decision Making. Absolute fine, stellar organization. Highly recommend it. The University of Maryland is very community-focused. I mean, they're part of the community. They recruit from these communities. And what better thing can we do as a fire and rescue service or a training agency than to go out there and participate in something like this, which will impact thousands of kids per year?
Obviously, this program is so successful. Is there a way that people in other states can find out about this program and bring this program to their states?
Absolutely. They can call 1-800-275-6374. That is the Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute in College Park, and they can ask for me, Bob Shepard, and I will be more than happy to send them a copy of it, discuss them with them how the program is structured, how it's set up. I worked with the city of Bethard, Colorado for about 2 months planning this, and we went out there and did the program for Bethard High School, which had lost, I think about 10 or 11 kids in 12 years. In a year we went out there and did this program, they didn't have one accident during prom season. In every school we have done, I remember one in Frederick County, Maryland that we did last year, the principal sat by his telephone. He said, "This is the first year my phone hasn't rung on prom night."
Wow. Impressive program.
Yeah.
Can you give the phone number again just in case people are scrambling for pens?
The Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute. It is 1-800-275-6374.
Most parents want to learn as much as they can about how to handle the teen driving issues in their own families. What resources would you suggest in terms of consulting for information and advice?
Well, there's several resources there. They can go on the website, www.teenissues or teen driving. Any of those will bring up websites. They can access the AAA website, absolute great organization, the Highway Insurance Institute of America in Virginia. They're on the website also. Some of the local motor vehicle administrations, outstanding resources. I know, for instance, in my state, in Maryland, Mrs. Farrow, Ann Farrow, who is the administrator, she has got a great list of handouts and programs that are going on up there for parents to call, and they'll send out brochures and information. I don't have the phone number handy with me, but if they contact their local motor vehicle administrations or Department of Motor Vehicles and talk to the people that are in charge of the driving schools, they'll give the appropriate resources there. Oh, and one last one, NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.gov. They will have statistics on airbag deployments, airbag deaths, driving issues, fatalities. NHTSA is an outstanding resource on the web for a lot of updated information.
Okay.
Okay, so this, all the parents who are listening out there, we now have some ammunition. And you have helped so much, Chief Shepherd. Thank you so much for being here and helping all of us as parents. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 149. Also, tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.